Okay, I've had a sip of my coffee, and I'm gonna try to do this. I'm Jacob. I never talk on this show, but I've been involved in it since almost the very beginning. I make all the music and do some of the production and sound design and stuff.
Oh, hi. That's Jacob Rosati, the man who makes this show sound wonderful every week.
And I'm gonna use ChatGPT today. I have some like weird symptoms, and I'm gonna try to figure out what this knows about that, if it can help me figure that out. Here we go.
When he found out we were gonna do a show on artificial intelligence and how it might help people with undiagnosed illnesses figure out what might be going on with them, he stepped right up. See, he has an undiagnosed illness.
So I opened up ChatGPT and yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot.
And he's gonna let us listen in.
If you've never used it before, it's just like basically like a message box where I can like talk to the AI and ask it questions. I'm gonna ask it about some symptoms I have. I have like some weird symptoms I've had for a long time that I don't know exactly what they are. I have a pretty good guess, but let's see what this knows. So first I'm gonna say hello. I wanna be nice. Hello. Great. It says, hi there. How can I assist you today? Kind. Okay. I've been to doctors that are not as kind as that, so that's a good start. Then I'll say, I'm going to treat it like a doctor and say, I have some strange symptoms that maybe you can help me diagnose. Sounds good. Send.
More than 25 million Americans are suffering from some kind of rare disease, according to the National Institutes of Health, and up to 350 million people around the world have an undiagnosed disease. There is a lot of overlap between rare and undiagnosed diseases. Their doctors will try to treat individual symptoms, but without ever knowing what's really wrong. These patients may continue to suffer. And in some cases, if a doctor can't figure out what's wrong, they may decide nothing physical is, in fact, wrong and refer them to a mental health practitioner. While I'd argue that probably every one of us could stand to have a mental health practitioner on our team, they can't diagnose a rare disease. But can ChatGPT or something like it? Is AI the answer? From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through a team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes, from teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments. UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at everythingittakes.org.
So I have some strange symptoms that maybe you can help me diagnose. And it responded and said, I'll do my best to help. Please describe your symptoms in as much detail as possible.
Petri Dish producer, composer, and sound designer Jacob Rosati is talking to a ChatGPT that is specific to medicine.
Okay, I don't think I'm gonna go into as much detail as possible to start because it's weird, but like, how should I say this?
So Jacob types for a while, saying everything he might say to his actual doctor if he was at a physical appointment, and it's a lot.
I wrote, about 13 years ago, I woke up one day feeling sort of fuzzy, as if I'd been hungover, but I hadn't drank or anything. Everything felt far away from me in a strange way, like looking at the world through a window. I could clearly see, but it just felt wrong. I felt out of it for about an hour, and then it went away. The next day, I woke up and the exact same thing happened and lasted for about an hour before going away. But then the next day, it lasted a little longer, and then a little longer, then a little longer, until my whole day felt like that. I woke up and went to sleep in this weird, like, foggy state, as if I was, like, underslept, but I wasn't tired. Like, I had a headache, but there was no, like, pain involved in it. And I felt distant from the world, unempathetic towards others, and depressed. Sometimes the feeling would get worse if I was in, like, a brightly lit store, or if I was working through anxiety, but it would never get all the way better. Never. I tried a lot of stuff to help figure out what is going on. I can't remember everything, but I had EKGs, EEGs, MRIs, went to several eye doctors. I was prescribed antidepressants. I was prescribed migraine medication. I did an elimination diet. I did a silent meditation retreat. I tried acupuncture, a lot of therapy. I went completely sober, not that I was using a lot of substances before. I tried psychedelics, that didn't do anything, and many more things I can't really remember. Not one of those things changed my symptoms at all. I've had the same symptoms for 13 years.
Of symptoms, 13 years of seeing different types of doctors and specialists, having every test that is offered, doing everything you could think to do at home, and Jacob still doesn't know what's going on with him. But something definitely is. It's just not something that comes up quickly in a standard panel of blood tests. It's not something you can easily see on imaging like an MRI. ChatGPT is what's called a large language model, a type of artificial intelligence that learns how language works by ingesting a huge amount of information, including an incalculable number of books and articles. All the libraries in the world, well, not all of them, but a lot of them, are in its database.
So that's what I wrote to ChatGPT. I could continue to go on, but let's see what it says. Here are some conditions that might be considered. The first one is what I felt the most identified with, which is depersonalization, not that as much, but derealization disorder. This condition involves persistent feelings of detachment or being outside oneself, depersonalization, and experiencing the world as unreal or distant, derealization. That's how I feel.
Jacob is surprised that a diagnosis he'd been leaning toward comes up immediately on ChatGPT. It took him nearly a decade to come up with that one on his own. No doctor ever mentioned it before then.
The other ones say chronic fatigue syndrome. It says that this condition involves extreme fatigue that doesn't improve. And that's not really true. I have no problem getting up in the morning. Usually I'm tired right now, but that's not the normal me.
ChatGPT is an example of generative AI, which uses machine learning to learn patterns from information, then predict what comes next to create new content. That's what it's doing here.
The next thing says persistent migraine aura without infarction. I don't know what infarction is, but this is exactly why I took this migraine medication before. It says that some people experience migraine auras, visually or sensory disturbances, without headache and pain. They can sometimes be continuous. I don't think it's 13 years nonstop. I mean, that doesn't totally make sense.
A couple of weeks ago, we introduced you to one of the ways AI might be useful in the medical field. It could help first responders make faster decisions about a variety of things, saving lives. One of the researchers behind that project, Amina Kutub, is a biomedical engineer at UT San Antonio, UTSA, where she is an associate professor and has a lab. She's also an assistant director for the UTSA Matrix Consortium. That's 80 AI researchers and applied engineers and scientists who are focused on finding ways to use AI to improve human well-being.
There's a number of thrusts. I'm a lead of one of the thrusts, which is focused on augmenting human performance.
So, using AI to make humans better. I asked Dr. Kutub if applications like ChatGPT could be really useful in cases like Jacob's, where he has persistent symptoms and no answers about what's causing them.
Yes. So ChatGPT and other algorithms are generating predictions of people's medical conditions and their health based off of creating a whole bunch of existing data sources about diagnoses. And as you add information to ChatGPT, as you provide your data, they're trying to find patterns that they can link up to prior cases. And so there's good ramifications from this, and there's also scary ones. The good ones are you might find a diagnosis much faster than an individual physician could for you. And it's building off of hundreds of thousands, potentially, individuals' patterns to be able to predict what might be the condition that you have.
And the scary ones?
It might get that wrong, and it might not be tailored to you specifically. So there's a lot of common diseases that people have rare manifestations for. And so if you're in that bucket of people who have outlier responses to a common disorder, then the likelihood of a ChatGPT or another algorithm quickly knowing that is probably less than a doctor thinking about what are the extreme cases from their intuition, what are the extreme cases, and what would their best bet be. So I would say there's a benefit, and then there's also this risk that comes with having an AI which doesn't intimately know your background make a decision for you.
Okay, but a study from the National Institutes of Health Undiagnosed Diseases Network found that more than 1 in 10 of the patients referred to it each year with mysterious undiagnosed illnesses have diseases that can be diagnosed by experts who just look closely at their lab results and doctor's notes, but haven't been. So in these cases, the answer is there, but the doc who intimately knows the patient's background missed it.
Primary care doctors, they're not experts in a specific rare neurologic disorder, as an example, or an autoimmune disorder. And yet the experts themselves also don't always see the big picture and don't always keep up with the literature. And I found this from personal experience, of course, with my family, but also just talking and collaborating with doctors. They're seeing patients on such a rapid rate that they're not necessarily learning like an AI chatbots have the opportunity to. They can't read hundreds of thousands of papers every day, whereas AI can. So how can we allow the doctors to make use of that? And rather than critique them for being wrong, saying, this is what we can do to help you be better the next time.
So it seems there is a role for AI in situations like this, augmenting human performance, which is your area of research with the Matrix Consortium.
Yes. To augment a human performance that includes augmenting the doctor's performance and giving them the tools that would help them do their best work and to actually focus more on the cases which are difficult to diagnose.
What might that collaboration between AI and a medical doctor look like?
So when a doctor sees a patient, they'll have a summary from the AI of what the AI predicts might the person might be ailing from, or what the AI says, this is an area where we need to have more rigor, or we need to have a manual intervention. We need to have more knowledge from the doctor in this area.
We'll have a look around that kind of doctor's office when Petri Dish continues.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. Let's get back to Jacob Rosati's conversation with medical ChatGPT.
Here's another one that maybe it could be. Lyme disease. This tick-borne illness can cause a variety of neurological symptoms, including brain fog and fatigue.
Generative AI has generated several possible diagnoses for the persistent symptoms that he's been experiencing for more than a decade.
I don't know. I love hiking and backpacking. 13 years ago, I did less of it, Lyme disease could be something that maybe fits in there.
Lyme disease? That's an illness a person can get when they're bit by a deer tick containing a specific type of bacteria, Borrelia burgdorferi, and it's something else Aminakutib is working on using artificial intelligence.
People respond to the bacteria that ticks carry in many different ways. And it's not just one bacteria that a tick can carry, it could be many. So there's heterogeneity in the mechanisms that a bacteria or disease can cause, and there's heterogeneity in individuals' responses to a particular disease. And then the changes over time of an individual is also variable. So there's a lot of nebulous medical conditions that could be a fallout of being exposed to the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. So understanding this has been a conundrum for doctors and for patients. And so where AI can fit in is to start to tease out what are the patient symptoms that link to certain mechanisms, biological mechanisms. So there's a lot of subtleties in how you would diagnose a person and how you might treat a person that AI can start to quantify and identify, where a doctor may not have all the, well, they won't have all the training data, and they won't necessarily be able to identify patterns on their own because of the heterogeneity of the response in Lyme disease and the patient groups associated with Lyme disease.
There are a number of illnesses, including many cases of chronic Lyme, that are diagnosed by exclusion because there is no blood test or other lab test that will say, ding, 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 this is your disease. In the case of Lyme, you could be tested for antibodies to the bacteria, but those antibodies aren't always detectable, even when a person's health continues to deteriorate. This is also true for a disease we've explored in several shows, long COVID. Also, for disorders that show up over and over again in my family, connective tissue disorders like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is associated with disorders that are known by acronyms like POTS and MCAS. Then there's fibromyalgia and myalgic encephalomyelitis and other bacterial diseases like chronic Bartonella, which I guess you could call chronic cat scratch fever. These diseases are diagnosed based on symptoms and ruling out other diseases that do have tests and can cause the same symptoms. But many of these diseases have common symptoms, which complicates things. Could AI help tease all of this out?
I believe so. And as an example, you mentioned common symptoms. So across the disorders, when we're talking about symptoms, tracking those symptoms longitudinally is one goal too, using sensors and AI. So it might be that all of them lead to brain fog, or all of them lead to pain, or all of them lead to immune response. But the dynamics of that might be different. It might be different daily. It might be different over the course of a month or a year. So it might be that learning from that, we could say, well, we could get the same target, but when you give a therapy would be different across these disorders. Or how long you give a therapy might be different across long COVID versus the chronic effects of Lyme disease. So those are things that would be tailored to an individual, not only when they present at the clinic, but across their lifespan, so across many, many years. So I envision AI being used as a helper, not only for doctors, but for everyone suffering from chronic diseases or from conditions where it's variable day to day. It's variable across months. It's variable across years, medical conditions.
You mentioned sensors there, like, I don't know, like a Fitbit. How would that work?
So as an example, one of the things that I've done in my own research is to look at daily behaviors that people do on a regular basis. So passively monitor daily behaviors. So that could be as simple as passively monitoring your heart rate across the day. It could be much more advanced. It could have passively monitoring what organisms are in your breath or in the environment around you during the course of the day. That information can inform an algorithm, which also has information about maybe your genetic background and or maybe the symptoms you're suffering from or the symptoms you're interested in identifying, what are the cause of. And then it will look for patterns in history, patterns from published data, or patterns in the data which really are ones that don't fit something they've seen in the past. And they'll flag that. They'll say, these are really interesting, or we think this is what you might be suffering from. But it's what it's doing is it's taking diverse data sources and it's identifying links between them or correlations between them at a much faster rate than a manual processing of that data could do.
Pattern seeking, right? And it seems like to really do this right, you'd need access to wearable device data and maybe a continuous glucose monitor and, you know, every medical record that you've ever had and your family's ever had too. It really seems like a lot.
It is. So if you have a CS specialist and you have a primary care doctor, it seems a simple thing to have them share data. But I would say that it wasn't simple, and it still is not uniform across the U.S. that all doctors that are seeing an individual patient have access to all the data. But that process of integration of the data is coming. So the idea that you'll be able to share, if it's a wearable device data like a Fitbit, you'll be able to share that data with a doctor or an AI doctor. At the same time, you can integrate that with other data about you. So the envisioned future for medical records is a way to have a clearinghouse for many different data sources. It's not there yet.
One thing I've been really excited about is AI being able to look for patterns in genomes that might help millions of people with rare and or undiagnosed diseases find answers in their genes. A human being going through genomes looking for patterns, that is a momentous task. But using AI, that could happen like in an instant.
Yes. So as an example, working with genetic data, you could quickly see what is differences between a parent and a child. And if you're looking at a rare disease, as an example, and you know two people who have that rare disease, AI can be used to find the common mutations in a disorder and compare that with the background of a family member's genome. So you can quickly identify what type of mutation an individual might have. And from that, you can also see where it is on the genome. And so you have predictions of where that might change the underlying cellular and molecular biology, that mutation, as an example. That type of data is not data that a doctor can quickly synthesize. So using machine learning has been an integral part of bringing in genetics into any diagnosis of a disorder. And machine learning has been used throughout the lifespan of all of the genetic testing we've been doing already.
All of this is a very big deal for people who've been, in many cases, sick for years or maybe their whole lives and have never gotten any answers. In some cases, they are treated like hypochondriacs or like all of their symptoms are psychosomatic.
So one of the critiques and frustrations from those who suffer from many different chronic disorders where they don't have a diagnosis and they don't have a treatment is that they're often discarded or feel that their voices are not heard from the medical community. Well, by highlighting it using AI, that these are real symptoms, these are quantifiable symptoms, these are quantifiable characteristics that people are suffering from, we highlight that and we emphasize the importance of that. And I think that's one of the key things that maybe has been overlooked about what AI can do. The symptoms and feelings that people describe as nebulous that maybe doctors have not been as comfortable working with can be quantified by AI and can be linked to a mechanism which a doctor might be more comfortable looking at and a diagnosis that a doctor may not have thought of prior.
Let's go back to Jacob.
Okay, let's see what comes next. It says, considering you've had extensive tests and treatments without improvement, it might be helpful to revisit a comprehensive physical and neurological exam with a specialist, discuss your complete medical history and symptoms in detail with a new healthcare provider, possibly a neurologist or a psychiatrist with experience in psychosomatic disorders.
Psychosomatic disorders. Even AI wants to make sure it's not all in your head.
I'll say, thank you. Gotta be polite. So I wrote, thank you. Out of these options, I feel that it is most likely derealization, Lyme disease, and I'll say, I'm gonna treat ChatGPT as the doctor, even though this is kind of an in-between approach, but I'll say, what do you suggest? What do you suggest I do? Okay, it's giving me suggestions of what to do for each of these problems. And it always is pointing me back to consulting a primary care physician or talking to an actual doctor. It's not trying to be the doctor by what it's saying, which is pretty cool because it's not a doctor.
In undiagnosed disease communities, they're all over social media. You'll often hear folks say, including me, by the way, that what we really need is a Dr. House to investigate our every symptoms and our history, our environment, and our whole genome. You just heard Jacob say AI is not a doctor, and that's true, but could it help every doctor be sort of a Dr. House?
That's a really good question. So I think it will empower doctors to be able to spend more time with individual patients in a way which is more productive. So what it will do is it'll present in, you can think of a clean spreadsheet where it's saying to the doctor, look here, you haven't tested this part of a potential mechanism for this disorder. So it's going to highlight where to focus for the doctor. But it's not going to, I think, replace the doctor. So it's not going to make every doctor the best doctor on their own. It's going to be a combination of that doctor being able to be educated in how AI brings the data or highlights certain data parts of a medical record or highlights behavioral data in a certain way. So I think it's going to be, what it's going to be is it's enabling the doctor to bring in more information in a way which highlights key parts about it, an individual's history and behavior. So it's empowering us to play Dr. House, but it's also empowering the doctor to spend more time in researching themselves, in looking more carefully at the cases, which are confounding. And so I see it as, I think analogies have been made to, you know, it's doing what a dishwasher has done for manual dishwashing. You don't have to wash all those dishes by hand or an autopilot does for a pilot. Again, it's a helper, but it's not replacing the pilot. And if you have cases where, you know, you have special china or you have something you don't want washed in a dishwasher, you're still going to have those cases. And for the pilot, if you have extreme environmental cases when you're flying, you're going to default to the expert, the pilot, and not the autopilot. So I see AI in the medical field doing the same thing. It's this helper that's really making things a lot easier for the doctor to focus on the very challenging cases. And then it's empowering them to help you more and to make more headway on the cases which are harder to identify treatments for.
And now Jacob can go into his doctor with the information he got from ChatGPT, and they can talk about it and what may be next. So Jacob can be more of an active participant in his medical care.
That's a goal. Can we empower individuals? It's also empowering doctors because there's also a large body of medical experts and clinicians who are really focused on identifying the best treatments for individuals with chronic conditions which don't have a clear diagnosis. And they're looking for something like this. They're saying, I understand my patient's suffering from something, but I don't know what it is. So that's where AI can come in and help identify what would be the probable cause and what could be a really good first treatment.
I will be following this very closely. It is very exciting, I think.
I agree. Thank you, Bonnie, for allowing the opportunity to share a little bit more about what we're doing with AI.
Thank you. Dr. Amina Qadab, biomedical engineer, associate professor at UTSA, and an assistant director for the UTSA Matrix Consortium for Human Well-Being. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TBR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. It was edited by Yvette Benavides. I wrote the show, and Jacob Rosati composed all the music and created the sound design. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.